Boo. Oh, it's that time of year again, Anthony.
It sure is.
Can you believe it?
I can't. I can't believe it's been a year.
I can't believe we've been doing this podcast for a dog's age. We are back again. It's Halloween 2025.
We're back and worse than ever.
Well, the country's worse than ever. I feel like we
had
doing
so much
okay.
hope last Halloween.
No, actually, I was thinking about this today. Last Halloween, the election was sort of hovering over Halloween.
I do remember that because it was less than a week later.
Yeah. It's the second. So
was it the second?
Yeah, November
2nd. I thought it was November 5th.
Well, maybe November 5th, yeah. Anyway, it was the next week after Halloween.
And boy, was that scary.
Yeah, and then it happened, and then the nightmare happened.
Yeah.
Well, there's something, without joking, there is something to be said or something, or questions to be asked about, like, what is horror in this time? You know what I mean? Like, we were talking recently about how, like, there have been good horror movies lately. Is that because we want to be... we want to be scared by something different. So we're is
that's
it escapist?
Different than our political reality? Maybe.
Because we're scared every day, right? I mean, I find that I have conversations with people that start okay, and then it's just like you just walk around like Charlie Brown, where it's just like,
can you believe it? This is really what's happening.
You saw that, huh? Yeah. One person tries to make the other feel a little better at some point, but then... You know, and they're like, "Yeah, but did you hear this?" And like, "Oh no, I didn't hear that one."
And then every conversation ends with like, "Oh, but the midterms."
Yeah, well, Gavin Newsom is.
Oh boy.
Anyway, but
you know what? Let's not focus on that.
Let's forget the real horrors of life. Let's talk about fun horrors. Halloween. This is, if you're a PCMC fan, this is like Roseanne Halloween specials. You must be like, every year, here comes PCMC. They do Halloween all month long.
Talk about a fright, Roseanne.
I know. Yeah, let's not get it again. Let's not get into depressing shit.
It's like the Simpsons edit.
Yeah.
The Simpsons Halloween.
Yeah, you know, the last 3 years or so, we've been doing Halloween themes where, well, first of all, we always do every episode in October is a Halloween special. Mm-hmm. All October, all Halloween.
All hands on deck.
We give you multiple Halloween specials because we love it, you love it. The last couple years, we've been doing like themes, but this year we were like, you know what? Let's go back to the way we were doing it before, where it's like different subjects, and you guys kind of came up with your own ideas and stuff. So I like the looseness of that.
Yeah, feels good.
Today we're talking about a movie. I was gonna say horror movies. Like, I guess it kind of is. It's kind of a thriller.
A thriller.
It's an erotic thriller.
Erotic thriller sounds.
Oh, this movie's
great.
Hot.
It is.
There's hot things in this movie. I told you downstairs when you were making my decaf coffee that I wanted to start this podcast off with a hot take.
Wait, didn't we want to start by
talking about how problematic this
is? Yeah, we fully acknowledge that Dress to Kill from 1980, Brian De Palma, is very problematic.
It's very problematic. It's very transphobic. It's very wrong-minded. It in its worst moments, it indulges in sensationalism. There's a scene at the end where they talk about gender reassignment surgery that you don't even need that scene.
No,
and
it's awful.
It's meant to make you like...
To like, ooh, that's scary.
Which is, by the way, if you describe any surgery, you would have that same feeling. Surgery...
Right.
If you explained heart surgery, you would feel just as weird. Yeah.
It does a lot of awful things.
It does a lot of bad things, but it's... An important movie. It's talked about like in that great documentary I always bring up, Queer for Fear.
It's also talked about in Disclosure.
Yeah, it's an important movie, and it is insanely well made.
It is. It's not without its merits.
Yeah.
We were also going to say, I mean, spoiler alert, I think if you're listening to this, you know who the killer is.
Yes.
So the killer is played by Michael Caine.
Yeah.
But we said we're having an issue with pronoun use because this movie is not respectful,
right? Like,
to transgender individuals in any way,
right?
Shape, or form.
And it's not accurate in
at
how
all.
It depicts gender and gender identity. So we were like, "What
the character Bobby? Do we refer to as?
I think
she. I think she sounds right.
Yeah,
and respectful.
Yeah.
We're going to do better than they did, for sure. But you're going to start with a hot take.
All right. By the way, I've been sitting on this hot take for hours, and can I tell you my dream? I kind of hope that you agree with me.
Okay.
I think Dennis Franz is hot in this movie.
I have never been more attracted to him in my life.
Fuck yeah!
I was watching this and I was like, Dennis Franz got me hot under the
collar.
He's
got a Jake Johnson.
He's hot.
Miller kind of. He's Dennis Franz. He's got the fucking gold chain. He's all Italianed out. He's like, hey, sweetheart, blah, blah, blah.
But I was attracted to him.
Charming. He's never looked better. He's like, looks like a young, good looking man in this.
I was attracted.
I was like, he's kind of hot in this.
I love that that's your biggest takeaway.
Well, we're going to talk about
how he's also hot. His character is a raging misogynist.
Oh, a piece of shit.
He's like, all right, sweetheart, why don't you just leave the detective work to me?
You're a hooker. There's a lot of dialogue in this film. But no, I mean, people talk about, understandably, people talk about how hot the leads are. Michael Caine's very handsome in this movie.
Yeah, very.
And Nancy Allen, holy moly.
She's great.
Wawa weewa.
Wawa weewa.
That last scene, oh my God in heaven. But you know what? Let's count among them. Dennis Franz, he's got a boyish charm in this movie.
Angie Dickinson also looks gorgeous.
Oh my God! Although the she used a body double, so those aren't her real breasts.
I was talking about her face, Mike. But
oh, all right, coming out. All right. Well, you know, the very first scene is her masturbating in a shower. So
and then, no, but it's
give
her,
me some credit.
And then she's imagining being raped in front of her husband.
We gotta go through this whole movie.
Is this the first time you've ever seen this?
Yes.
Okay, so
somehow it passed
me by. I saw this once as a child.
That seems inappropriate.
Do you remember the cable movie network Flix?
Yes, I do.
It used to be on Flix a lot.
Didn't Flix become something else?
It might have become Stars or something.
Okay.
So I'm talking about like 1997. I was like 10, 11. It was on, and it was like they used to have commercials in between the movies.
Yeah.
Because Flix like ran on a schedule where it's like you could watch this movie every day this week at 7 or something like that.
Stupid.
It was like that.
Yeah.
And it was like Brian De Palma's classic Dressed to Kill. And I was like, oh, I like scary movies or whatever. I feel like it went way over my head.
Oh, sure.
But
I mean,
I know
bet you it got it as a scary movie.
I got it as a scary
a
movie.
In it.
Yeah. And I also, even as a child, and I still feel this way as an adult, feel like it is like a spiritual sibling to Carrie in many ways.
Yes. It has
same director, a lot of the same cast members.
A lot of the same beats.
Same music, same beats. Yeah, same beats.
But it's also
story-wise and Psycho.
Right. It's also a big, huge love letter to Psycho.
Yeah.
I mean, there are scenes right out of Psycho in it.
And there are the I don't want to jump around, but at the end, the monologue is right out of the end.
Oh,
of Psycho.
The explanation of the psychosis, the psychiatrist explaining the end is, by the way, the worst scene in Psycho.
And the worst scene
and
in
the
this
worst
movie,
scene in this
too. But anyway, so you never saw this before?
No.
Did you know of its existence?
Yeah, I mean, again, from documentaries and from, you know, reading about it, it's the kind of, it's just, I never stopped and actually watched it. Maybe because I've, you know, it does. No, people talk about it. People say it's good, but people don't talk about it in terms of like, you know, it's put with things like Psycho and Crying Game and Silence of the Lambs. Any of these movies that equate gender
nonconformity as
murderous,
as psychs, and being psychosis
crazy.
And murder.
Yeah, you're of a
and it's always a some kind of
sleepaway camp.
Yeah. It's always some kind of statement about manhood too.
Yes.
Yeah. It's real shitty. But
so I never saw it. I have seen Blowout, which came out the next year. It's the same director. And a lot of the same people, and it's very similar. I feel like the character of the son in this movie is sort of like a prototype for the protagonist of Blowout, which is John Travolta. And like when Allen, the kid's like when he's like listening to the detective, like that's all what Blowout is.
Yeah, okay.
And Nancy Allen, who was De Palma's wife.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So Nancy, he met Nancy Allen on the set of Carrie. She played Chris Hargensen, and then they got married, and she was in a bunch of his movies until they got divorced.
Yeah, this is De Palma,
and she kind of felt. I don't think she did a lot after that.
One of the things about De Palma is that he was like, his movies were like quotes. Like, he was a great pasticher. He would slip into the style of a different director. At this point, this is very much, he's in his Hitchcock phase.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is very Hitchcock, although I think it takes it further. Maybe this is the kind of film Hitchcock might have made had he gone, lived longer. But
like the way that the characters dress and like the city and
it's
very Hitchcockian.
Incredible. I mean, the city.
There's so much great New York.
Yeah.
1980s New
York.
And
the style and the art and the settings.
And a healthy dose of racism.
We'll get into that.
This movie is problematic on all.
Very problematic.
On many fronts.
No, but the cinematography is like bespoke. It's got its own language. It does so many interesting things. And he's got the precision of Hitchcock, where it was all about the camera moving and the actors had to follow the camera. But his camera is more frantic. Like, it'll move in ways that Hitchcock's camera never moved.
So I think that, two things. First of all, when Gene Siskel reviewed this movie, he gave it a positive review, but also said that it's silly how easy it is to figure out who the killer is. Did you know right away? Because I knew right away.
Okay, so this is something I was thinking about. So I always knew who the killer was from pop culture.
Okay.
So like I've always known it was, but I found myself when I've seen it twice now. I watched it twice this week.
Yeah.
I found myself thinking, does anybody not immediately know that it's him?
Right.
Is this a surprise to anybody?
That's what I was wondering too. Like, is it even supposed to be a surprise?
I think it is, but I think, you know, maybe put yourself in that time and put yourself in a transphobic mindset.
And it's like, oh, he's a man. He can't be this.
Like, it couldn't be him.
Right, yeah.
But it's so obviously him to the fact where, like, it looks like him.
Yeah.
Now, that other woman.
It's him in a wig. Even
sometimes
it's
played by another woman who looks like him.
Yeah.
And later on, she's a detective. Fran's like, this is Detective Betty Luce.
That's where the movie, I think that's really smart when they introduce that. That, like, some of the ones you've been seeing was actually a detective.
Right. And by the way, some people misunderstand that scene and think that that's a trans character. It's not.
No, it's not.
Because he says police person. He's just stopping himself from being misogynistic.
Which is a good thing for his character.
Yeah, that's right. It's growth.
What I was going to say was I think that Angie Dickinson gives an amazing performance in the entire time she's in the movie.
She's the Janet Leigh.
She is the Janet Leigh. And she was also like a big star. So I think it had the same effect of like, oh, surely she's not going to die right away.
Right.
But I think that the sequence in the art museum is so gorgeous.
It's its own like silent film.
It's so good. So she's a sexually frustrated housewife. The movie starts with her fantasizing about being raped in front of her husband while she's masturbating. She says,
"Well, that whole first scene is a dream, and it's just amazing." We slowly move into the bathroom. She's in the
showering,
shower,
very similar to the opening of Carrie.
Yes, and it's
long lingering shots of her,
and it's also
naked body.
Itself like a meta reference to Psycho because she's in the shower
and he's shaving,
with a straight razor, which is what the killer uses.
Which
and
is also
of course,
such
that's
a,
like super Freudian,
so gendered, yeah.
And the husband's sort of like disaffected, like he's not really watching her, and she's kind of like touching her breast and touch. It's not really her, but touching herself, watching him. And she's fully made up.
Yeah.
And the lighting in this movie has a great halo effect to it. Mm-hmm. It's very sort of like glossy and cottony. And then someone comes behind her and like puts their hand
from
her
behind
mouth.
Her in the shower.
In the shower.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right. And then kind of, I suppose, sexually assaults her, but it kind of doesn't look like that, but that's got to be what it is.
Yeah.
And then the husband doesn't say anything or see it. And then it cuts right to
them having sex.
Right. And a more realistic thing of like a married couple having sex.
And she's not. We learn that she's just very sexually frustrated. And then she goes to Michael Caine, who is her therapist, and says, like, her husband's a lousy lay.
Yeah. I think, and see, that's in that weird aspect, I feel like it's, I don't want to say anything. It's not progressive. But in that aspect, I was like, it's cool that this movie shows, first of all, shows a woman who's in her 40s that's has a sexuality, and we're showing a body that's not like 20.
Yeah.
And good on the movie for showing her as sexy and letting her be sexy in middle age.
Yeah.
And showing that sexuality is an important part of a marriage and stuff.
So then she goes to this art museum and she sees like an attractive guy.
Well, wait, we should say before she goes to the art museum, when she's talking to Michael Caine, the therapist,
yeah,
she kind of like comes on to him a little bit.
She's like, do you find me attractive? And he's like, yes, I do.
Right.
And she's like, would you sleep with me?
In the mirror.
Yeah.
Which is a motif.
Yeah.
And
then he's like, no, because I wouldn't sleep with you because you're my patient or something.
And he goes, because I have my wife. Does he really have a wife?
I don't know.
Never seen. Yeah, never seen. He does say multiple times, I have a wife.
Yeah. So then she goes,
also think about, I'm sorry to be
no,
so
go
film,
ahead.
I'm sorry to be so film school about it, but like, when he comes in, there's no secretary, and he's like, oh, Mary's away. I'm my own secretary this week, which is like he's playing this quote-unquote feminine role already.
Yeah.
Like we're already introducing this theme of he's taking on what's supposed to be a female role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he like makes her tea and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. So then she sees this like attractive guy. She drops a glove.
She...
On purpose,
well,
I think.
She takes her glove off. Well, first, let's say she's looking at a painting of a woman who's like looking right at her, which is interesting. And then a gorilla looking right at her. So you keep seeing those two paintings. She sees like, and she's just come from the therapist, right?
So she sees that the gorilla is like just like animals, like sexuality.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I have this urge to get fucked, basically.
And she sees like a young couple playing grab ass.
Yeah.
And she sees like a couple with a little kid. And she sees a guy trying to hit on a woman. She's watching people. And then she's like making out like a boring like list, like buy turkey.
Yeah. She's like, her husband's wealthy and she's like a New York City housewife.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's writing down like things she needs to buy from the market to make dinner.
Yeah. And her son is Keith Gordon from Back to School and Christine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a science kind of nerd. She takes off. I was trying to think why she takes off her glove.
It looks like she's surprised at the fact that
she sees her ring.
Her ring.
Was she trying to show him a ring or not?
Her face reads to me as like, oh, I took off my gloves to like take off something to entice him a little bit. But then he must have been turned off by my ring is the face that I feel like she makes. Like, oh shit.
Yeah.
But then I think he's actually turned on by her ring.
We should say the
you don't ever see his eyes.
Yeah,
he's wearing sunglasses.
This guy and also her husband are such vague presences in the movie.
Yeah.
And I actually thought he was Robert Evans, the producer, when he first sat down, because he's got that like 70s hot guy. Mm-hmm. Like he's got nice hair and very like polo kind of look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like sunglasses on in a fucking museum.
Yeah, I mean he's attractive.
Yeah. And then it's like a little cat and mouse. Like she actually drops her glove. She's like, he's walking away. So she's kind of following him. The camera's so interesting because it's such a narrator in this movie. Sometimes it is showing you things that the audience, that the character doesn't see yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are times when it is in the point of view of the character.
Yeah.
There are times where it's like lingering behind, but it always feels deliberate with where the camera is showing you is very deliberate.
There's a point where so she's following him from room to room.
Yeah.
Then she loses him. Then she turns around and sees him again. Then he's following her. It's this cat and mouse thing, and you the whole time you hear the score, which is really good and really like
The score is by Pino Donaggio, who did Carry, but he's very much doing very like a Bernard Herrmann.
Yes, like string heavy kind of score.
Yeah.
And you hear like her heels, the clack, clack, clack of her heels.
And she's wearing all white.
And she is. And then she, with white gloves, too.
Yeah.
And it feels like the camera, it's like she's chasing him and the camera's like following her.
Yeah.
And like sometimes the camera almost loses them both.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
It's, you're right. It is the camera. The point of the POV almost acts like a narrator in the movie, like a person following all these other people around.
Yeah.
And then eventually he gets into a cab. She comes out. He's like holding her glove.
Yeah.
She can't find her glove. He's in the backseat of the cab and he holds the glove out the window and she comes over and she's about to say like, oh, I'm so sorry or something. And he just starts making out with her and she jumps right in the cab.
Yeah.
And then they just start going at it right in the cab. He goes down on her right in the backseat
of the
cab.
But wait, a few interesting things.
And it's so hot.
It's very hot. It's super hot. A few interesting things. One, they do a very simple old-fashioned film technique where three times in this movie you'll see a composited image of her remembering something and it's like on the screen. So she's like, oh yeah, my glove, and she remembers it.
Yeah.
When she comes outside, she throws her glove away. In one shot, it's like a high angle shot, which I think the camera would be on a crane, and then it kind of moves in and gets her in a close up, and then it pans, you see the killer for a split second.
Yes.
In the pan.
It's so crazy.
The killer even looks and turns like with the camera.
I didn't even notice that till the second time I watched it.
Yeah. And then you see the glove. It's amazing. And
it's such a jump scare.
Yeah. And then, but if you even catch it.
Right, because there's no musical cue.
And if you're seeing for the first time, you wouldn't necessarily.
You'd be like, oh, there's a woman in the background who seems to be watching.
Who seems to be watching this whole thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the split, what's it called? Split diopter.
Yeah.
So this movie's big trick that they do a lot is the split diopter, which I've seen this before. I'm not a huge technical cinematography guy, I must admit. So what this is, I'm trying to think of a famous example of it. It's like when in a movie you might have seen images where there is something in the foreground that's in focus and then something in the mid or background that's also in focus, but it's not deep focus where everything's in focus. It looks almost like two images pasted together.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a very dreamy, uncanny thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they do it is by, you have the lens of the camera and then there's this other lens that's like a half lens,
right,
which is basically like creates a magnifying glass.
And sometimes they'll, often in the middle, there'll be a blur line.
Right, because it's not in focus.
Right.
And this movie does it a million times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also something about that that's very narrative, because it's like the camera's like, I'm showing you what's important. Look at what I'm showing you.
Right.
And it creates a very dreamy thing. It's very dreamy.
What did you think about the fact that she goes to his house, she sleeps with him, she writes him like a note, and then discovers in his papers that she goes through that he has an STD?
This is 1980. This is 1 year before the first AIDS case in America.
But I read that it's like she's being punished for transgressing.
Interesting.
Her marriage.
That's very interesting. I don't know.
And the music is like, doo doo doo.
I saw it as a horror misdirect, but I didn't see it as moralizing. Although she feels guilty. Like when she first walks in, when she's walking in with him to the building, she's looking at all the people in the street like, oh, does anyone see me? And then there's that thing where she leaves, there's a little girl in the elevator who's like staring at her, and she feels like the little girl's judging her, and the mother even says like, it's not polite to stare at people.
And then she gets killed in the elevator.
Well, she remembers she left her ring upstairs. Another thing where like you see the ring, the
but it's
composite
so, it's
of the
so,
ring.
What's the word I'm looking for? Like the tension is so high because like she takes the elevator down, then she's got to take the elevator back up, and it's like,
yeah,
you're following her the whole time, very much like Janet Leigh in Psycho.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's that whole thing of Janet Leigh in Psycho, like, goes into the bathroom, comes out of the bathroom, goes back into the bathroom, comes out to get something,
you also find
then goes into
going,
the shower. Yeah, like, why am I...
She could have lived if she didn't do this.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Any one of these things had happened differently, she could have lived.
Right. And then so on the way back up, she goes up to the seventh floor. She gets cornered in the elevator by
the door opens and it's the killer. And the killer is presented to us as
a blonde woman with
sunglasses. But you can tell it's a wig and sunglasses.
And like a black trench coat.
And wielding
a barber, like a straight razor.
But they do this thing, which I think is so Hitchcockian and uncanny, which is they do like slow motion, but it's not actual slow motion of the film. It's like slow motion acting. It's like they're indulging in a moment that they're creating. Like, so, the way he menaces, I should say she, the way she in this moment menaces
and, like, almost, her. Like, points it at her, like, yeah. This is your punishment yeah. for what you just did.
Right, right.
And in a way, like, Bobby is moralizing.
Right.
Like, now I'm going to kill you because you fucked up.
Right.
You just cheated on your husband.
It's a lot like Norman Bates, because it's like, you turned me on.
Right.
Right? She turned on the Michael Caine character, so the Bobby... And this is not how it really works in real life, but the Bobby half of him
yeah.
is punishing her, right?
But also, like, just like Norman Bates, like, I caught you doing a bad thing, and now I have to punish you.
Sure, no, absolutely. It's so, I mean, there's shots right out of it. I mean, when she finally dies, she, like, her head goes back and she slides down, which is the exact shot of Janet Leigh dying.
And the blood is great. There's a good...
And it's, like, mirrored. Everything's mirrored.
Yeah, everything's mirrored. That's a motif throughout the whole movie. I think the movie does a really good job. De Palma did a good job of... There's a lot of good... De Palma loved slow-mo during this era.
Yeah.
There's a lot of slow-mo in Carrie. Like, a lot. Yeah. Like, that whole scene leading up to the bucket of blood is, like, 30 minutes in slow-mo.
Yeah.
There's a good mixture of slow-mo and just slow acting.
Yeah.
Like you just said.
When Nancy Allen sees it,
and then there's, like, the split second of her grabbing the razor just in time, yeah. grabbing the murder weapon just in time, it's all played in super slow-mo, plus I think she's moving slowly.
Right, she, like, opens her mouth and is, like, silent yelling, and her hands are coming up. But she's clearly doing it slowly.
Right.
It's like... her acting is what's elongating it.
Right.
And then she sees the killer in the reflection right. of the mirror.
But then when the elevator shuts, you realize that all of that was supposed to be like a second.
Yes, exactly.
I also think it was funny to me that the murder of Angie Dickinson is intercut with, like, this banal conversation about stocks
yeah.
between her and this, like, John.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And she's not presented as a sex worker at first. At first, right. she's wearing, like, a business suit. And at first, you're like, oh, these two are, like, colleagues.
Well, it's so 80s, even though it's only 1980. It's so 80s because she's a sex worker, but she's capitalistic. So that's,
yes.
So that's her saving grace. She has a painting that she goes, oh, that's going to be worth money. And she gets stock tips from
right.
her customers.
It's and then you weird. Don't even realize that she might be a sex worker until, like, he runs away. And she's like, wait, what about the... She yeah. says that, like, right, basically, right. like, what about the sex?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
we were supposed to be doing... This was a business transaction.
Right. And
you don't realize it fully until Dennis Franz is like, you're a hooker.
You're a hooker! it's really interesting. Yeah. So this is what I was thinking.
Her nails, like, her nail work and hair work is so gorgeous.
She's so gorgeous. there's nothing more beautiful than a woman on film when the director's in love with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, we cut to the we're in the police station, and I don't mean to pull on a thread for a movie like this, but how is the guy that she fucked not the number one suspect?
Well, because she's holding the murder weapon.
Right, and because she says that it was a woman.
A woman.
But he also doesn't believe that. Although he in the end he says he does, but he was trying to, like, get her to do
it. Well, because he's like, a woman couldn't do this, basically.
Yeah.
And she also gets another woman in the hallway starts screaming and sees Nancy Allen holding, like, the murder weapon.
Right.
So she's the suspect.
Right.
So that it adds in this interesting element of, like, she's got to prove that she's innocent.
Right. Right.
Which is kind of like Psycho, but it's a twist on Psycho because, like, Marion's sister doesn't have to prove she's innocent.
It's also a twist in that Angie Dickinson and her son have a close relationship.
Right.
And they're kind of Norma and mother coded, but they're not, they're the good guys,
right?
And the psychologist but it is reflects the bad guy.
But it reflects, like, Marion's sister and Sam.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
these
yeah.
two are gonna
yeah
figure it out.
Yeah. Oh, you're right, an unlikely pair comes together.
And also
to
it's
it out.
And that Nancy Allen's character, I don't know the character's names,
Liz Blake,
like, Nancy Allen and Angie Dickinson never knew each other.
No,
never talked to each other.
It just happens
they share one moment where Angie Dickinson's reaching yes. out to her, and then the door closes
yeah.
the elevator.
Yeah. No, it's she becomes the...
Then she becomes the protagonist.
I think it's a great... I love that it has... We have that whole museum thing, and we have that slow, weird, languid opening. But then I like that after the first death, it's now, like, Dennis Franz and Nancy Allen, and it's, like, more plucky and more, yeah. like... It's, like, the movie kind of speeds up a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's great. Well, he interrogates what do you call it? Michael Caine, which is the way they played is Michael Caine. It's not that he's hiding. He's completely a split personality. He doesn't know that it's him at all. But there's also this thing where he keeps getting messages from a supposed patient named Bobby, which it doesn't sound like his voice, but it's Bobby being like, oh, I'm a woman inside and she's going to come out and mm-hmm. I had to kill that patient because you've been fucking your patient.
Yeah.
And then like, he like backs up. So like up.
Bobby's punishing him,
right?
Also,
but it seems the movie is saying that he doesn't know that Bobby's
right.
him at
right.
all.
Right. Which I guess that's like Norman Bates, right? Like Norman Bates believes
I don't
that
know.
It's.
Is that true?
I think like
I thought he knew when he would. Oh, maybe not.
No,
because
he's like mother, what'd you do?
Oh yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But at least Norman knew to be secretive, whereas like Michael Caine goes. Out and like is like investigating, and he goes to the therapist, his own therapist.
Well,
the therapist is like,
well, but just don't forget, Norman Bates is covering up for his mother. He thinks right. his mother's a murderer.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's cleaned up after her. But yeah, you're right. He doesn't. He's like, I want to get to the bottom of this, just like you do.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
and then he's like, okay. So
and there's also like maybe this is typical of a noir, but also it's 1980. Like, there's such a, like, fuck you to therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Vibe.
Hey, like, listen, doctor. Yeah. Which one of these weirdos did you see you think could have killed her?
I like to believe in my heart that is Sipowicz. That's a young Sipowicz when he first joined the NYPD. NYPD Blue picks up, like, 15, 20 years later.
Yeah. You know, I was like, after the movie, I was like, what happened to him? And he retired and just really retired. He's just...
He won like a bunch of Emmys from
NYPD. Yeah, and he was like, nah, I'm not going to act anymore.
He was also in Psycho 2.
Yes. He plays a lot of sleazeballs. He's sleazy in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, he did this... He had a specific thing he did.
There's so many...
No, that whole conversation with him is great when he's like... you know, he's like, maybe it's one of your patients. And he's like, well, I, you know, there's doctor-patient confidentiality. I can't tell you. I can't give you my date book.
Well, he does that. Dennis Franz does, like, the character is really Sipowicz-y in the way that it's like, you're a hooker. You have no credibility. You're just a therapist. You have no credibility. Like, everyone, his style of interrogation is right. to kind of shit on everybody.
And he kind of threatens Nancy Allen into being like, I'm going to make you the number one right, suspect unless right. you...
And then if you're to believe him at the end, it seems like a lot of that was an act.
Yeah. Right. He needed to get her to break and get the... because he couldn't get a judge to give a court order.
There's so many great shots of like... and the depiction of New York... As there's something about New York on film in the late 70s, early 80s, where it's like, it's got a beauty, but it is presented as like a crumbling, like the castle's crumbling.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of shots of, there's always smoke on the streets and the subway's really scary.
Well, it's funny, when they're in the museum and then that guy's-
That's like Upper East Side
that,
fancy.
That reminds me of like a Woody Allen movie.
Right. But then there's like the seedy side of
right,
New
right.
York.
Then we're in like the police station.
Right.
And like, yeah, then it's like, yeah, it's a totally different thing.
Yeah. And I just, the subway is, in all these movies, the subway is really menacing.
Oh, the subway stuff is so great. I mean, racist, but the subway.
Well, that was that whole panic about crime in the 80s. Which is like kind of coming back and is also like really firmly centered on the subway.
Yeah. It's not just court. In between the 70s and 80s, it's caught in between the Italian giallo films of the 70s and the American slasher films of the 80s. Mm-hmm. This is very much like this movie has more in common with like Dario Argento movies than it does slasher movies.
Right.
Which is fine because Dario Argento movies are very much influenced by like Psycho and Peeping Tom and stuff. So it's sort of like a continuum. But that's what's interesting. Like it's in between, which is such an interesting thing for a movie about a trans person, although not an accurate or positive representation of a trans person. But it is interesting that the movie itself is sort of having an identity crisis. Not to say that it doesn't hold together. It does.
Well, you could if you explore that theme, like almost every character in the movie has like two sides.
Yeah.
Right? Like Nancy Allen has like that capitalistic 80s side. Right. Then there's like the sex worker side. Right. And then there's the wife has like the housewife side and then like the really sexual side.
Right.
And they're kind of trying to separate those two from each other.
Yeah. 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 No.
That felt intentional to me.
Yes. No, I agree. What do you think of? There's a really interesting long sequence that has a split screen, and it begins with Michael Caine in his office, and on the other side of the split screen is, I think it begins with the killer, or maybe it's supposed to be the cop at that point. I get loose track of something. Yeah. But then it's like Nancy Allen like talking to her broker,
yeah,
and then talking to her madam or whatever her boss is, and then they're both, and then they both start watching a real episode, yeah, of Donahue that had a trans person on,
right,
which is so weird because that's a real trans person who, like, in that little moment, like, you get some sort of reality,
like that person's actually speaking the truth,
right, and then that's kind of it,
right.
But I guess it's that dichotomy again,
yeah,
to show the split screen.
Yeah.
Then there's this whole thing of like the son is like this computer nerd science wizard. De Palma gets super into this in Blowout, where like he's very interested in the idea of like technicality, mm-hmm, and like tools and stuff, mm-hmm, like that, instrumentation. And the kid goes to the therapist's office. And he times how often people come out. Mm-hmm. And so he sets a camera to go off.
Time lapse.
Yeah, every like 4 seconds or 8 yeah, seconds or whatever it is. So he'll get an image of the killer.
Yeah.
And
they do. They get an yeah, image of Bobby coming
that
out.
That whole sequence office is what Blowout's like. Blowout is, John Travolta is a sound engineer for movies. And he
hears an assassination.
Right. Yeah. And so it's also a little bit like Conversation.
Yeah.
And he sees like a murder, and then Nancy Allen's in that as well. And then it's a lot of like that technical shit. It's really interesting. Very similar to this, like a good like companion to this movie. So there's a scene. There's a point where Nancy Allen is being chased in a car by the killer. But yeah, then we also see Michael Caine somewhere.
Yeah, so that
so
can't
is
be,
that the cop?
That must or, be. There's a,
so I isn't think it the cop that the remember she gets into a taxi and the taxi driver's like, I'll take you on a date or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the killer's walking and the taxi driver opens his door and they fall.
Yeah, I think
is
that's
that
the cop?
Cop?
I think so.
Right, because yeah, when she comes back up,
yeah,
there's the killer's there.
Yeah, and then that's also the cop in the subway, isn't it?
Oh, is it? No, because they had the blade.
Doesn't I thought she said that was you chasing me? Oh, I guess she meant in the car.
Yeah, because the yeah
yeah
because the killer confusing, has the blade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
that whole subway sequence is it's very Hitchcocky. It's very interesting. The just the bummer of it is all of the guys in the gang are black.
Yeah,
the cop is also black, but that doesn't change anything.
Right.
Nancy Allen running away goes down into the subway and she is like watching the stairs because she's
so it's
being
just
followed.
Like a woman being menaced by men everywhere
and yeah
above and, ground below
right,
ground in a museum like that's just
yeah and they are immediately like sexual about it
right.
And like you know
well you're I think you're supposed to read it as like they know she's a sex worker and
yeah
gonna,
yeah
you know
yeah. So she runs from them and then she runs.
She runs between cars, which I love anytime you get to see
yeah,
people going in between cars in the New York City subway.
Yeah. And then,
which as Liz Lemon said, the cool people, you're not supposed to do it, but the cool people do it anyway.
Yeah. I remember doing it a lot as a kid.
Oh, I did too. It's really dangerous. I would never do it now.
It's super.
They do
thrilling.
It a lot on Broad City too.
Yeah. 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 The cool people do it.
Yeah, the cool people do it anyway.
There's another great cinematography where she's Nancy Allen is like sitting and there's a cop and she's like sitting by the door of the subway car and there's a cop that's sort of looking at her,
mm-hmm,
which is that's very psycho, like cops are dangerous, like right, we're like because Hitchcock had a fear of police. And also the lights keep flickering, which is like so old school, like there would be electric issue so the
yeah,
lights would flicker in the train. The camera is on Nancy Allen and then it pans, we see the killer
yeah,
in the fucking behind the glass.
Yeah.
But again, there's no sting, there's no music there. So it's a couple
it
times we see
eerier,
the killer. And, yeah,
yeah.
And then to the cop, and then the lights are going on and off, and then back, and the killer's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, and then she's running from the guys, and she runs into killer, and then the son character comes and, like, saves her.
Yeah.
And that's when we see she's, like, in this big apartment, and she's, like, now she's, like, wearing pajamas, and she's, like, a totally different side of
her. I think that the another thing that makes that character, Liz, interesting is similar to what makes, I guess, Marion Crane interesting is, and maybe this is a trope for, like, thrillers and mysteries. There's something about the fact that, like, Marion Crane in Psycho and Liz Blake in this movie, they are criminals, technically.
Sure.
But they are being menaced by crime.
Yeah.
Also, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it kind of makes you think about, like, crime and the nuances of crime, right? Because, like, her entire... how she supports herself is an illegal operation.
And also, she's in between a killer and a cop who's putting pressure
could,
on her.
Right, so she could go to jail,
right,
or she could get killed.
Right, right. At one point, she's like,
because she's a criminal, quote unquote, she has no credibility.
Yeah.
So he could easily say you did it and get her put
right,
away.
Right, which he says he's going to do.
Right.
At one point, he goes, "I'm going to book you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Unless you do what I want." And there was that great scene where she's like...
And which sucks because she's trying to do the right thing. She's the one who says, police, somebody call the police.
Yeah, yeah. I love when she's like, you know, there was a killer chasing me. And he's like, I got a nice cell. You'll be very safe. Of course, he's got like a fucking toothpaste. He's doing the whole best. Thing. He's doing the whole fucking thing. So hot. Michael Caine goes to talk to Bobby's therapist, who is the mayor from Ghostbusters.
Yes. I was like, why do I know this person?
So watching it, knowing that he's the killer, his face, it's very interesting to read his face being like, he's like, oh, Bobby's going to kill somebody. And, you know, yeah. Okay. So then we get to, there's a big finale and then a kind of longer than you need it to be denouement. The big finale is the plan, which, and this gets so hot. The plan is...
She's going to seduce him.
Right, because they don't know that Michael Caine is the killer, but they know that the cop wants the date book.
Right.
So they could investigate all his patients. So, like, we got to get that book.
God, remember when, like, you could get a physical thing?
Yeah, I know, right? She's looking at a Rolodex at one point.
Yeah.
So she, and this scene's pretty famous for how sexy it is. So she, the son's across the street looking, you know, through binoculars. It's raining, of course. She's inside, she's, you know, in the office. And they had met at one point.
Right.
So she's like, she tells him like, oh, I want to have, can I see you? I can have a session with you because I'm disturbed over being almost killed and blah, blah, blah. So it starts like that, and then she's like walking around.
She starts getting really flirty.
And the office is all dark.
Yeah.
And
it's raining out.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And she kind of does a little bit. Yeah. And she's like, you know, he's like, what is your. Well, oh, what point? She's like, oh, it's dirty, and I know dirty. And then she says, like, I'm a hooker. And he's like, oh. And you can see him getting interested.
Yeah.
She takes off her clothes. She's wearing a black bra. Black panties and black.
I know that probably did a lot for you.
She's so beautiful in this movie. And she like lays on his. Oh, there's also the great fucking line where she's like, do you want to fuck me? And he goes, oh, yes. Yeah. Classic line.
Michael Caine really gives a great performance.
He's great in this. Everybody's great in this. She's so hot in it. And then you could see her nipple at one point through her thing. It's like on purpose. Anyway, so she's like, okay, well, I'm going to go freshen up or whatever. When I come back, I hope you're also naked. And we see him look at the mirror, and then we see him smile and start to take his clothes off. So you think, like, oh, he's going to want to fuck her.
But this is
But he's turned Bobby. He's going to, yeah.
So when he's looking in the mirror, is that him, like, checking in with himself? Is that him, like, what are we to read the mirror as?
I don't know.
I mean,
because he smiles too, right. So it's like, is that smile becoming Bobby? We're told in very, very literal detail from the therapist later that when he gets an erection,
he becomes Bobby,
right? Because, and even this is so heteronormative, he goes, Bobby gets mad that he's being masculinely sexual,
which is so, that's not a thing,
right? Right, like, right,
it's
like,
so
like
binary.
The female part of him is mad that he's getting a boner,
like it's so. So this is why this just doesn't age well at all, because like
you can be a trans woman and be a lesbian.
Right.
He could be, she could be attracted.
Like, having a dick and getting your dick hard
is not just for a woman.
Is not, like, right. a masculine. Also, like, being trans. And,
well, the implication is.
Yeah.
The implication is, like, she gets mad that he's attracted to a woman because she wants to take over the body and she's a woman and women aren't attracted to women. They're attracted to men.
Right.
Like, that kind of thing.
Right, right. And it's also. It's not it's not trans. It's split personality, which
right. Like, none it's, of it's, like, it's not a none of it's a
like
real
the
thing.
Idea that you're two people is not what it
right,
is.
Right. No.
So yeah, she's like looking. She gets the book. Whatever. She comes back in. We see the killer come with the knife, and then we see someone who looks like the killer behind grab the boy. Right. So for a minute, you're like, "What the fuck is? Are there two? Are we screaming it?" but this is far before Scream. There's a great movie, Totally Killer, which is with Kiernan Shipka. It was a slasher movie that came out, I think, last year or the year before. And it's a slasher movie where she goes back in time in the 80s. And at one point, they're talking about killers. It's like, maybe they're screaming it. Maybe it's two killers. anyway, so you're kind of like, what is this? But you realize that is the cop who's also...
Right.
Why is the cop dressing? I don't know what that means.
Is
the judge just happens to dress? The cop just happens to look like Michael Caine?
No, I think it's part of it. Like, isn't it like the cop is dressed as Bobby to menace her to get her to do what he wants her to do, which is get the date book?
That's very weird.
I don't know. It all falls apart if you think looking too hard too about people, it. Yeah.
But the cop shoots. And then
through the window.
Yeah, and we do the slow motion again.
We do a great slow-mo, and you hear crying.
And it's Michael Caine, like...
Michael Caine, the wig's off.
Crying and upset. It's actually upsetting.
It's really upsetting, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're in the police station, there's the psycho scene of... It's funny, both of these words are no longer acceptable, right? But in Psycho, he says... He says transvestite.
Yeah.
He's a transvestite. And then this one, he says he's a transsexual.
Yeah.
Right. But then everything else is like word for word, almost exactly the same dialogue.
It's the same thing.
Which is a bad, and then both of them are bad.
Right.
They're
like,
not.
I've always said, like, Psycho's a perfect movie without that scene. That's the worst scene in Psycho.
It is. And it's explaining something that doesn't need to be explained even.
Right. But in Psycho, I think it's to calm you down.
I think it was like they were worried the audience. I think Hitchcock was worried the audience wasn't going to understand.
Or was going to think. I think it's even weirder than that. I think they were worried that they were going to think Norman was gay. Because that's worse than being a killer.
Yeah. In 1960.
Yeah. It's super weird.
So he has this whole thing. And then, you know, they do like. And then, like, you know. Then Liz is like the voice of the audience, and she's like, oh, so when he got aroused, he became Bobby the killer.
Yeah.
So it's like that whole thing. And then there's that, it's like not interesting and whatever. It felt very much like, oh, this is a huge nod to Psycho in a way that's like, it's too much.
Nodding to, like, the worst, like, part of Psycho.
Right, because, and it's also like almost literally word for word the same speech from Psycho.
It's the same, yeah,
it's the same scene.
It's a different, well, it's different in that it's describing something different, but it's staged like it's such an homage,
and it's just
to
like
that
Johnny
scene.
Explain It All is here.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
Then you get
another week, and it really, transitions and weirdly into
a really, really great extended dream sequence.
Well, before that though, from that we see Windows on the World in the World Trade Center.
Oh yeah,
we're in the World Trade Center, and it's the sun.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Angie Dickinson's son. And she's explaining everything. It's like an extension of the scene.
Yeah.
And that's the scene where she starts explaining gender reassignment surgery.
Right, yeah.
And she's like, a penectomy, and you cut the penis.
Yeah, I found it all really weird.
It's all like, I don't know what the word, it's so exploitative, and it's meant to creep you out.
Yeah, because
and there's like a character, there's a woman behind them watching,
getting sick,
like
ugh, ugh. How are they talking about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt very much like, that there was the only moment where I was like, is this movie like castrating this character and like being moralizing and being like, he's evil because he's not a man. He wants to be a woman, and that's what makes him a psycho.
Maybe.
And like he would go to these lengths to get rid of his penis.
It goes so that scene goes so far into the lurid, it makes you feel like, does is this movie just misguided, or is it actively transphobic?
Yeah,
like, is it trying to, like, do they have an agenda against it, like, trans people?
Yeah, that's what it felt like. And I didn't know this until I did some research, but even at the time when it came out, it was protested by queer groups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously not the way it would be now, but it was still, there was still a contingency of people who were like, this is not right.
Yeah.
And then feminist groups also didn't like it because they were like, this movie is just violence against women.
Right. Which ends up being what the slasher thing.
Right. All is, becomes. Yeah.
And then, as you were saying, we go into a very long, protracted dream sequence. But, like, is it all a dream?
I think it is all a dream. Is him in
Bellevue escaping also a dream?
Yes, because that's not what Bellevue, like, looks
like. I'm sure.
Like. But, like,
I'm sure it doesn't look like a Victorian surgical theater.
Where, like, they're all, like, he, like, attacks a nurse. And then, like, every other patient is watching and, like, getting excited.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
That felt like it had to be part of the dream.
Huh, okay.
And then... Because then he shows up to her house.
Well, it becomes Halloween. We see
through her eyes.
Yeah.
And she's in the nurse's outfit now.
Yeah.
And she's in the shower. Liz is in the shower.
Yeah, Alan's in the shower.
And all of it's a dream. Because then she wakes up at the end, very similar to Carrie.
Right.
Same beat.
Even the music, same music sounds exactly the same.
And I didn't think about this until I read a critique of the movie. The movie begins with a woman having a fantasy, and it ends with a woman having a nightmare, and they're in the same bed. That's the same bed.
Oh, right. And they both take place in the shower.
Yeah. It begins and ends this very similarly.
Okay. I want to ask you, what is the relationship between Nancy Allen and the son character?
So the vibes I were getting were like, he's attracted to her. She thinks he's cute, but, like, she wouldn't do anything with him because he's young.
Okay.
So it's like a big, for her, it's like a big sister thing. Maybe he's attracted to her. But I think it's like the fact that they don't ever cross into the romantic is supposed to show that, like, she's a good person.
Okay.
Because he's just a kid and she wouldn't do that to him.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think you're right on a narrative level.
I think they each gain a family member.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Like,
she had no one. He has no one now. They get each other.
Right, right. I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
And I guess the father's, like, out of the equation totally, but...
Well, he says that's his stepdad. He's like, my father died.
Right.
Which is interesting about the 80s, right? That it's still close enough that he had a parent that died in Vietnam.
Yeah. So it's just, like, they get each other as a support system at the end.
Yeah.
Because then when she wakes up and she's freaking out, he comes to comfort her.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't read it as romantic.
There's some, I don't know. Yeah. There's something there. Even if not on the literal level, on a sort of metaphoric level.
Yeah.
This movie is so heteronormative in every way. Mm-hmm. It's just man and woman together is good.
Yeah.
Right? You cheat on your husband, bad. Mm-hmm. You are trans, bad. Right? Like, part of me feels like, you know, you're a sex worker, bad. Like,
right,
part of me
even
feels
though she
like,
survives, she's going to be tormented by trauma for the rest of her life.
But part of me feels like having any kind of relationship with this kid is like, okay, you attach yourself to a male,
mm-hmm.
and now you're in a... Because she's like, there's this whole thing where she's like, he's like, you can come stay with us. My dad went away. Right. So, like, she's like in the house with them, which is kind of weird. Like, there's something about that homemaking
right.
aspect that feels like... I don't know.
Yeah, I get it.
She stepped into heteronormativity.
Right.
Which is where you need to be.
Right. Yeah.
To live a good life and not die.
But she is, she will, it, I mean, if I feel like it ends with, like, she will continue to be tormented by this.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, at the end.
Or
of,
he just wanted to do Carrie again.
I guess. But, like, it's very, the music is almost exactly the same. And then transitioning into the soft music over the credits is almost exactly the same as Carrie. Like, it's beat for beat the same. But in the same way that, like, Sue is, like, she's the sole survivor, but she's going to be tormented by the fact that she's the sole survivor at the end of Carrie.
Yeah,
but that's Dress to Kill. I think it's... So I guess the ultimate question is, like, despite all its problematicness, is it still worth... Do we throw out the baby with the bathwater? Like, is it still worth watching? I would say yes.
Yeah, I think there's value to it.
I think as long as you go into it knowing that it's going to be... what it is. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But there is value to it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot about it that I really, there obviously there's a lot about it I really like.
On a technical level, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazingly put together piece of film. Mm. It's just wrong-minded and wrong-hearted.
Yeah.
De Palma has really kind of like fallen off. He's not really done much. I think 2016 was his last movie. And then he disowns that movie because he didn't get to edit it.
Well, somebody, I was reading this before, and don't quote me because I'm just remembering this. I might be like, I'm paraphrasing. Mm. But somebody asked him recently, like, how do you feel about Dress to Kill now? And he was like, basically his answer was like, I'm like, I understand the times change and like, I get it and that's fine. Like, yeah. a kind of okay answer. Like he didn't defend it really hard.
Yeah.
Like the way that like, Friedkin like defends, cruising.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, no man, it wasn't, that's not homophobic. Like, I think De Palma is more like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. The
times were different.
Yeah.
Which I guess is an okay answer.
Yeah. It's an okay answer. I was looking at IMDb, and I completely forgot that he directed the first Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
Which is tonally very different from what that series becomes. Yeah, I feel
like he has, like, this era in the 70s and 80s of, like, him doing... You're right, he's kind of like Tofu. Like, he's doing Hitchcock, then the 90s come along, and, like, he's doing action.
Yeah.
And it's like, when is... What's him?
Right.
I mean, even Carrie, I think Carrie is a great film, but like so much of Carrie is like, even the strings from Psycho are used in Carrie.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's, and here too.
Yeah. A lot of it is Hitchcockian.
When she's outside the elevator and the woman starts screaming and she runs, you hear like the, But yeah, I do think this movie has value. It's a good spooky movie. You got good fall vibes in it. I love a good full vibe movie.
And I love, to me, just like anything that's like old New York on film, I just love.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a great Halloween watch, I think.
It is a good Halloween watch. It is, if you're a fan of Nancy Allen. It's funny, I was talking about Nancy Allen when I did the RoboCop episode with Peter.
Oh, I forgot she's in that.
And she's purposefully androgynous in that, right? It's so interesting.
She was in multiple, right? RoboCop movies?
Yeah, I think she stays longer than the actual guy who played RoboCop. Hmm. She's good. She'll do like horror documentaries and stuff now. Like that's fun. She's got a good perspective
and stuff.
Yeah, I bet.
That's fun.
Yeah, cuz she was in other stuff too. Other horror stuff too. Yeah. What are your Halloween plans this year? Are you like me where you kind of plan media around it? Like, oh, I'm going to read this, or maybe I'll pull out my complete works of Edgar Allan Poe, or.
A little bit. Like, mm-hmm. I like a scary read around Halloween.
Yeah.
For sure. I'll watch like some more horror movies and stuff. My actual plans for Halloween is probably going to be like taking my nephew trick or treating.
Sure. Sure. Well, to me, Halloween is not a day.
Right. Like, the day is different from the season.
Yeah. And my birthday is September 4th, so I always think of my birthday as the beginning of Halloween season.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense.
Well,
your birthday is, like, Labor Day, which is, like, the end of summer.
Right. It's also, when I was a kid, it was often the first day of school. So my birthday is, like, a transitional thing into the fall.
I like a cozy mystery.
I saw Clown in the Cornfield.
I have the book. I was just looking at maybe. I was like, maybe I should read that book.
I've heard it's good. It's like, it's a kind of YA.
Yeah, which is, that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good
one. The movie's beautiful with full vibes and stuff.
The last few falls, I've come back to Pumpkinheads.
Oh, by Rainbow Rowell.
I really like that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got all your, it's all, it's there. They work at a fall festival. It's got all the stuff. It's got all the
things you want.
All the things you want, yeah.
I have a signed copy of that. Which I
feel like she just released a new novel.
She did. I didn't finish it.
Is it an adult one?
Yeah.
I haven't liked any of her adult novels.
No, I liked Attachments a lot. I liked Landline.
I didn't like Landline. I didn't finish Landline.
I didn't. Oh, you didn't finish Landline? Really? I haven't liked her Harry Potter stuff.
I hate that stuff.
And
that was the worst part of Fangirl.
This new novel I didn't love. I did, though. She put out a book of short stories before this new novel, kind of out of nowhere, and that I actually liked a lot.
Okay.
So, you know.
What's it? It's like, what is it? The fangirl's character that then became its own thing?
Simon Snow.
Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah.
I think I've just got, I'm hoping that this new HBO series will change this.
Uh-huh.
But I just feel so like, I'm so over Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, can everyone join me in just fucking being over Harry Potter?
I think especially a lot of us now that JK, a lot of people are.
Like, with J.K. Rowling. And, like, it's sad because, like, I was, like, not to sound hipstery, like, I was reading Harry Potter, like, before people knew what Harry Potter was.
Oh, boy.
Okay? I was on board. I saw it. It was, you know who was a big fan? You know where I saw Harry Potter?
Yeah.
On the Rosie O'Donnell show.
Oh.
She was like, you got to read this book. It's great. I read it with my kids. And I watched it like one day when I was like homesick from school.
Like, I got to read
this. And I was like, I got to read this book. And I picked it up and I was like, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
And just the whole thing. I don't know. And I just hate J.K. Rowling so much.
I love fandom. It's the thing that has soured for me is J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. I mean, she's awful.
She talk about transphobic.
It's unbelievable. Oh,
speaking of Dress to Kill. She has a book. She did a book. She has like a series of books about like detectives. And there's one where it's like a transgender killer, which is like her opus.
She's
so hateful and but also so ignorant. Like, she repeats the dumbest stuff that's been debunked. And it's like, because she's one of these funny that you can know the truth. So you're just radicalized into a cult.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it's like you can't believe that somebody who's so rich is such a boomer.
Yes.
Like that have fallen for these conspiracy theories online.
That believes the trans people are really just trying to get into bathrooms with kids. Like,
and that also like buys into this narrative that like almost all kids who transition later in life regret it and detransition. And that's the part they don't want you to know about. Right, and it's like, that's not true.
Yeah. Fucking, she's the real horror show.
Yeah, she sucks. It's like, even, I know we've said this before, and it's not okay to be this hateful at all, but like, even if you were, you're gonna die on this hill and tarnish your legacy.
She is like, absolutely
just keep
gonna
it
die on
to yourself.
Hill. No, that's
and the world
the
would adore
thing.
You. Like, what is she right. doing?
She
went from being like one of the most revered figures to one of the most hated figures.
Because she's so deluded, she thinks.
She's fighting for women.
She's fighting for women.
Yeah.
And she thinks she has the moral high ground. It's insane. Anyway, happy Halloween, everybody. We got Halloween episodes coming to you all month long. Let's keep the spooky vibes going. Anthony, we end every episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.
Say like a ghost.
Go bye-bye.